Call this meeting of the Housing, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. We do have a quorum present. Lee Johnson, have you had a chance to review the minutes for April 16, 2024?
Chair Bajie, I have reviewed the minutes, and I make a motion to approve.
Lee Johnson makes a motion to approve the minutes from April 16, 2024. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Hey, everybody. All those opposed say no. All right, the motion prevails, and the minutes for April 16, 2024 are approved. Today we are hearing House File 4194, which we walked through yesterday, the Housing Supplemental Budget. So yesterday we did hear some testimony to this bill, and today we'll be hearing and voting on a number of amendments to the bill. But first, Chair Howard, would you like me to move that House File 4194 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee?
Yes, thank you, Chair Bajie.
Chair Howard moves that the House File 4194 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. You also have a DE1 before us. Would you like to move the DE1 now, Chair Howard?
Yes, Chair Bajie, I'll move the DE1.
All right, Chair Howard moves the DE1. Not voting yet until we do go through all the amendments. So the DE1 is currently before us. Chair Howard, do you want to also move your A2 amendment, or do you want to talk about the DE1 before that?
We had a good discussion on the bill yesterday, so I think we can proceed right to amendments and would move the A2.
All right.
To briefly describe, we heard your bill, Chair Igbaje, this session, related to a clarification for our legislative intent on eviction expungement. We did get a fiscal note with costs to the courts, and so this amendment would add those costs to the courts to implement the effective date clarification to meet our legislative intent on the eviction expungement bill we passed last session.
All right. Thank you, Chair Howard. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? And the motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. All right, so we'll move, continuing on to the other amendments. We have the A4, Representative Nash, I believe that's your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A4 and request a roll call.
All right, Representative Nash moves the A4 amendment and also requests a roll call. Roll call will be given. Representative Nash to the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the A4 is reflective of a decision that was made by the Supreme Court over the last weekend. I don't know that everybody's had a chance to read it. The Chair and I have talked about it. Fellow housing nerds may or may not have had it pop up on their radar, but it has to do with fees that are charged by cities. And for those who haven't seen it, the Supreme Court agreed 9-0, unanimous decision, that many of the things that we've seen here in Minnesota, and the Chair and I did talk about some examples that we've seen in the past, are outside the bounds of what the Supreme Court has ruled should be allowable. So what this would say is that those are going to have to be addressed. They're not going to be permitted moving forward. And Mr. Chair, and we agreed on this, I have a testifier that can maybe explain it a little bit more because I live a little closer to it, and there are testifiers we've had here before. So I do have Mr. Nick Erickson from Housing First, who, with your indulgence, I appreciate, will come and give brief commentary on the A4.
Chair Howard.
Chair Igbaje, Representative Nash. I don't think we have done testimony in the past on amendments, but I'm comfortable with folks that want to testify and giving an opportunity if anyone else here wants to testify as well. But yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But because it's such a new thing that happened over the weekend, and it does pertain to things that are being done here in Minnesota, I think it's, I appreciate the indulgence. So if we could have Mr. Erickson come down and explain what the A4 would mean relative to the Supreme Court finding.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. As you make your way down, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nick Erickson, Senior Director of Housing Policy for Housing First Minnesota. And I'm going to preface this with I am not a lawyer, but I am, as Representative Nash will tell you, a housing nerd, and I'm sure the Chair of the Committee would agree with that. So on Friday, the United States Supreme Court, in a 9-0 decision, ruled that the Takings Clause of the United States Constitution, which protects property owners from their property, which has been expanded over the years to include money or cash, cannot be taken without just compensation. The reason that it's important to the housing policy discussion is because the practice of exactions, which is a taking of land or fee a fee paid in lieu of taking of the land, is imposed as a condition for approval of a development application or sometimes a building permit. We've seen the Minnesota State Supreme Court take a few swings at this topic over the years. And really, for a housing perspective, what this is it's any type of fee or land dedication imposed that payment, the approval of your development application or building permit is contingent on paying that fee. Historically, the courts have viewed these fees as being as an administrative or legislative action, administrative or legislative meaning not just this type of body, but also a legislative act or administrative act from a city council or county board would have been exempt from these taking clauses. This is where we get fee schedules. And really what the court's decision was is that these legislative administrative actions are not immune or exempt from the Takings Clause of the United States Constitution. As it relates to housing and development approvals, we have what's called the Nolan Dolan standard, which is two pre-existing United States Supreme Court precedents. Nolan meaning there has to be a connection, an essential nexus between the fee imposed or the dedication imposed and what it's being collected for. That's why we have park fees, which you can use for parks, but you can't use it for a sewer treatment plant. And then, of course, there's the more important one, Dolan, which requires proportionality. So is the fee collected done so in a way that is proportional to the impact imposed? And so what this decision issued Friday morning says is that legislative and administrative actions are not exempt from the so-called Nolan-Dolan standard.
So, yep. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Representative Nash or Chair Howard, should I go to you first?
I just want to say I think it would be fair to open it up if other folks want to testify. But
okay. Are there other folks from the public willing to testify as well? All right. I see someone else coming down. Sounds like we're going to have a hearing. please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will be very brief. Daniel Leif with the League of Minnesota Cities. Appreciate Mr. Erickson's overview of the Sheets versus El Dorado County court case. I, too, am not a lawyer, but I will point out that the Nolan and Dolan standard that was referenced is already included in existing Minnesota statutes. 462.353 sub 4, which the both amendments seek to modify, state already that fees must be fair, reasonable, and proportionate and have a nexus to the actual cost of service for which the fee is imposed. So we view the A4 and A5 amendments as unnecessary and would just generally cause additional confusion to existing statute that already covers the essential nexus piece. I think importantly, the court case also left open El Dorado County's defenses and didn't cast any doubt on local governments being able to impose reasonable permitting conditions, including impact fees on new development, under their traditional land use authorities. And we believe that 462.353 sub 4 is sufficient in limiting cities' authority to charge fees that are reasonable, proportionate, and have an essential nexus. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, members, I would point out again that in a 9-0 finding, the Supreme Court did deal with cases just like we're trying to talk about here. They said that they should not be allowed to do these. You know, I know that many Minnesota cities do this right. Many cities do not. And I think that by adopting the A4 and hopefully the A5, that we could maybe take a step in the right direction and proactively put into statute what the Supreme Court has already ruled on, and in doing so, prevent cities in the future from maybe pursuing something that may put them out over their skis and wind up putting them in court. So with that, I will be done, and I know we have a roll call.
Okay. Chair Howard.
Chair Igbaji, Representative Nash, thank you for bringing the amendment, the two amendments forward, and raising this issue. It is relatively new. As you mentioned, we just got the Supreme Court case. I would like to solicit more feedback from the community, from folks, about the specific impact of this Supreme Court case on Minnesota law. But what I would say is I think the issue you're raising about the use of fees and the use of practices within that cities use within development agreements with cities should be squarely in our conversation about how do we make sure we're building more homes and making sure that we're building them in an affordable way. I know that's work that we've sought to do this session. We absolutely need to keep on that track. And I think this issue is squarely in that bucket of work we need to do in the future. But at this time, I would encourage a no vote.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please take the roll.
Chair Howard.
No.
Howard, no. Igbaji.
No.
Igbaji, no. Lee Johnson.
Yes.
Johnson, yes. Representative Cha.
Yes.
No.
No. I'm sorry.
Cha, no. Representative Dotseth.
Dotseth, yes.
Dotseth, yes. Representative Hassan.
No.
Hassan, no. Representative Hussein.
No.
Hussein, no. Representative Kozlowski.
Yes.
Kozlowski, yes. Representative Myers.
Aye.
Myers, yes. Representative Nash.
Yes.
Nash, yes. Representative Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Representative Perez Vega.
No.
Perez Vega, no. Representative Petersburg. Oh, not here.
Oh.
Excuse. That's...
With five yeses and seven noes, the motion or the amendment is not adopted. We'll move on to the A5 amendment. Representative Nash, I believe that is also yours. Yes, that is correct.
Yep. Thank you.
To move the A5 amendment, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A5 and request a roll call.
Representative Nash moves the A5 amendment and also requests a roll call. A roll call will be granted. Representative Nash, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another in the line of making sure that we're not overcharging. And I will share a brief story. When I was mayor in Waconia, I was kind of a stickler for not charging anything more than we should have, but also not charging anything less than we should have. And I know this will be a surprise, but many of our staff thought that was particularly annoying from me. I know it's a shock that I could be annoying, but I heard that laugh. But it shouldn't be a revenue maker for cities to overcharge on things. I certainly understand and have spoken about in the past that there has to be funds allocated for moving paper and permits around City Hall. That is a completely valid thing, and I do not disagree with that. But overcharging is something that we should not be doing. So the A5 is another in a line that's trying to put into agreement with the Supreme Court findings. I think I know the outcome of this because we spoke earlier, but Mr. Chair, I think that once again, being proactive is what we do here at the legislature. We see things that are looming on the horizon or have been passed by the Supreme Court, again, in a 9-0 finding. And let's remember, I had a friend recently say that currently on the Supreme Court, they may not even agree that it's lunchtime or that the sky is blue, because there are some antipodal ends of the spectrum on the Supreme Court. However, they found together 9-0 that we should be doing things like the A4 and the A5. And I do appreciate, Mr. Chair, that you're going to, we talked earlier, and you're going to seek out some more counsel before this comes to the floor. However, there have been, and you and I have talked about some of these cities that have not done yeoman's work on how they do their things. This puts up guardrails moving forward proactively to say,
while there may be some ambiguity as to what proportionality means or any of those things, let's define it. Let's be bold. Let's step out a little bit like we did with a bill we might have had earlier this year. But this one is easier because it's backed up by a Supreme Court finding. So I know the outcome of this, but I'd still like a vote.
Representative North, you have a comment?
Thank you, Chair Agbaje. I wasn't going to say anything, but it's been mentioned a couple of times now. So I am a lawyer. I've read the opinion. I think, with all due respect, Representative Nash, I think your characterization of the opinion of the Supreme Court is overly broad. What the Supreme Court decided 9-0 is that the Takings Clause of the Constitution applies to legislatively directed fees just as much as it applies to executive branch fees. The Supreme Court did not decide and specifically says that it doesn't decide other disputes over the validity of the traffic impact fee or other questions. It remands it back to, I believe, the Supreme Court of the state of California for further deliberation on that. But I think it's premature to say that the Supreme Court decided 9-0 that these sorts of impact fees are not permitted.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Chair Abadie, Representative Nash, thank you for bringing this amendment forward. We got to look at how some of these fees are applied. We have a few cities that, granted, they might have a lot of development, but they're still putting over $1 million into their general fund from these fees. And I think that's where the Supreme Court was getting at it. Some of these fees are outrageous. They're using it for other things. So I think we need to take a look at these fees, what it's doing. It's one way that we can look at to reduce the cost of a home. I think I told this before where I talked to a realtor from the Lakeville area that had a small development, I believe it was around 20 to 25 lots. And after all the permitting fees, it added $62,000 per lot. That didn't count putting in the infrastructure. That was just the fees for that development. You can't tell me that the city with the permits, what the work they have to do between the city, the county, and Met Council, spend $62,000 per lot to inspect that part of it? That's absolutely ridiculous. So something like this, I believe we need to put this on here so we can actually help get the cost of a home down so people can buy a home if they choose. So we can get some starter homes and finishing homes done for those that want to buy a home or get rid of their or downsize the home they have to move into a smaller home. But without a home, it's hard to get that generational wealth, and that's what I would like to see, to get everybody to have that opportunity. So thank you, Representative Nash. Members, please vote for this amendment.
Chair Howard.
Chair Agbaje, members, again, similar answer. Thank you for bringing it forward. Agree that this should be squarely in our discussion about how do we make sure that we're where we can reducing costs of housing. Looking, the other piece I'd mention is for further work is when I talk to developers or folks, it's sort of the city-to-city application, one city doing this, another city doing that, kind of that boomerang that I think requires a little study as well. But I would still encourage a no vote. I think we should take a little more time to review the Supreme Court case and its specific interaction with Minnesota law and commit to continue to work with Representative Nash and members on this issue.
Representative Nash, any final comments?
Thank you for your yes vote.
All right. Roll call having been requested. Ms. Erdahl, please take the roll.
Chair Howard.
No.
Howard, no. Vice Chair Agbaje.
No.
Agbaje, no. Lee Johnson.
Yes.
Johnson, yes. Representative Cha.
No.
Cha, no. Representative Dotseth.
Dotseth, yes.
Dotseth, yes. Representative Hassan. Hassan, no. Representative Hussein. Hussein, no. Representative Kozlowski.
Yes.
Kozlowski, yes. Representative Myers.
Nay.
Myers, no. Representative Nash.
Yes.
Nash, yes. Representative Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Representative Perez Vega.
No.
Perez Vega, no.
All right, with four ayes and eight noes, the amendment does not pass. Moving on to the A6 amendment, I believe that is Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Bajay. Chair Howard, I'm...
Representative Myers, would you like to move the A6 amendment?
Yes, please.
Okay, Representative Myers moves the A6 amendment to your amendment, Representative Myers.
So, Chair Howard, we had a conversation earlier today, you know, coming up to your office trying to, you know, find those ways to, you know, not only looking at addressing the cost of houses now or, you know, affordability, but also look at what those future costs may look like. And that's the reason behind bringing this amendment, which just requires, you know, additional legislative review for any changes to the state building code that would be greater than $3,000. So, you know, I'm hopeful that maybe after our conversation it changed, but we will see.
Chair Howard.
Chair Bodger, Representative Myers, thank you for the amendment and thanks for connecting about it. Similar to the last amendment, I do think building codes are a part of the question about cost. Of course, they're the part of a conversation about safety and quality as well. Specific to this amendment, I would note the letter we got from the Department of Labor and Industry from Commissioner Blissenbach that just highlights a few specific concerns. I think my biggest concern is, you know, the arbitrary 3,000 number and what that, how this could be implemented in practice. But again, I think the conversation we really started in earnest this session about how do we build more homes, how do we address housing affordability in a holistic way, and look at if there's things we need to be doing differently. Something we haven't really broached too much in this committee is those building code issues. And so I would commit to working together over the interim to continue to work on this issue and kind of bringing that into a more holistic part of the conversation, because I think it's an important one. But I would urge a no vote on the amendment.
Representative Myers.
Thank you for that. You know, I did want to follow up a little bit. You know, after we met, I did see that letter that they sent over, and this body makes a lot of decisions for, you know, these departments. And I think that, you know, a lot of times this body doesn't shy away from telling the departments what to do. And if we're really going to try to, you know, address not only the here and now, but in the future, I think this is a good amendment to do that. Would the chair yield for a question?
Representative Howard.
Let me ask you this. Are you opposed to having the agency notify us when there is a cost to housing with their rulemaking?
Chair Howard.
Chair Igbaji, Representative Myers. I would want to interact a little bit more with the department with you on that. On its face, I guess my question would be, like, how often that's going to take place? You know, what does that mean for the agency? But I think that's a reasonable question to ask and a reasonable thing for us to continue to work on with in concert and with the agency.
Representative Myers.
Yep, and I just want to say thank you for that. And, you know, hopefully between, you know, now and the floor that we can look at that, because I think there are opportunities there. You know, the more information we have, the more listening that we do to see what these impacts are, you know, our job is to create, you know, those rules. And so if we get that information from them on the decisions they're making, again, we can be looking at the future cost of houses and make them more affordable.
All right. Any further discussion to the A6 amendment? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. We are moving to the A7 amendment. I believe that is Lee Johnson, that is the amendment. Lee Johnson, would you like to move your A7 amendment?
I move my A7 amendment.
Lee Johnson moves the A7 amendment. Please describe your amendment.
The A7 amendment deletes section 21 on page 13 of the DE amendment. That is the section that increases the debt ceiling. I have a lot of concern about that, going from $5 billion to $7 billion for the HIB loans. Those are backed up, if you actually read the statute, they're backed up by the taxpayers of Minnesota. We are currently, without adding any HIB bonds, we're paying over almost $33 million a year in debt service. And in this bill, we have added another $50 million. That's another $2.8 million. So that almost brings us up to $35 million a year that we're paying in debt service on these bonds. I think we have to look at and be careful at our debt service. It's getting up there. It's probably, without adding a single one more bond out there of HIB bonds, before we start going downward in our principal and interest payments, is 11 years. But we're adding $2 to $4 million a year to it at the rate we've been going. And that is concerning. We don't know what's going to be happening in the next few years. We've had high inflation, so it's getting nervous as far as, and with the high inflation, our payout rate's going to be higher because our interest rates are higher. So we have to look at it very carefully, and I think now is not the time to raise that debt limit. Now, we still have a couple of years before we reach that debt limit. But I think it's time to start looking at it and be a little more careful and being more conservative on the amount of debt that we have. Unlike Minnesota families, we can't just go get it out of somebody else's pocket. It comes out of our own pocket. And raising this and this debt ceiling and the amount of debt that we're paying on the loans is coming out of the back pocket of the citizens of Minnesota. So I think we have to be careful. So I think it's important that we do not raise the debt limit at this time.
Chair Howard.
Chair Baje, Lee Johnson. I would encourage a no vote. We did have a discussion on this. It's part of the agency's policy bill. And I think it's important to note that the debt we're talking about here, back to some of the conversation we started about the need for creating more homeowners, this is the debt that the agency uses to help finance home ownership for Minnesotans and is paid back by Minnesotans in a revolving way. And so, this is a tool that it has been critical to creating the dream of home ownership for more Minnesotans. So I think it's prudent that we vote this amendment down. So I encourage a no vote.
All right. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Chair, when this came up last week, whenever it was, and talking a little bit about that, I had inquired about how this would impact our general obligation bond limits and how that impacts it. And I know this is just setting the upper limit of what it is, but it would have to be reported somewhere. So do we still know how this is going to impact the borrowing authority through bonding going into the future? And will this actually reduce the dollars available for bonding this year?
Chair Howard.
Chair Baje, Representative Petersburg, we actually did do a quick stop in Capital Investment Committee because of this provision and have had some conversations with MMB and our capital investment staff. And the short answer is no, that this that will not impact kind of our general obligation debt guidelines. And if so, it's sort of an infinitesimal kind of decimal type of proposition, potentially, is what we've been told by staff. And if I've simplified that too much, we can get a little more information.
Representative Petersburg.
Well, thank you. And I know until we actually spend it, it won't impact it at all. But the obligation and the risk that is there as we are now continually to approach the top limits of our bonding authority with that, I think it's something that we need to at least keep in mind that it could have some negative impact by whatever $1 million it is. That's big money for me, but for our state budget, it isn't very much. So I think that's something else that we need to consider, that all these things that create debt and risk to the state needs to aggregately at least get put together and thought about. So that's my only concern.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Bajie, Chair Howard. I'm just wondering if you could, if you happen to know, I don't know it at this time, but it's something I want to find out. What percentage of these HIB bonds actually go for single family homes, nonprofit, rental complexes, to repair of nonprofit buildings, putting new roofs on, doing maintenance work that they don't have funds for because they don't put in capital outlay to cover the replacement of a roof. I think that's information we should know on these bonds because, like I say, it's coming out of the taxpayers' pocket of Minnesota.
Chair Howard.
Chair Gbache, Lee Johnson. I don't have them at my fingertips, but I know, like, for example, in the last award allotment through the RFP, Minnesota Housing did kind of break some of that down. And, you know, there isn't sort of 50-50, but what I would say is it's a pretty good mix of across the continuum from building new affordable housing rental for HIBs, preserving, rehabbing, but then also I believe this last RFP had the most ever we've ever seen for homeownership, manufactured housing, those kinds of investments. For the HIB bonds. And I just want to clarify this debt ceiling piece isn't purely about HIB bonds. It's some of the financial tools they utilize to create, you know, loans and mortgages for Minnesotans in as they purchase homes. And so it's, in terms of this debt ceiling piece, it isn't squarely just the HIB piece. It's also a very sizable portfolio in the way that the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency creates home ownership opportunities and financing products for Minnesotans.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Bajie, Chair Howard, thank you for that information. But I still am concerned. We have to be responsible for the taxpayers of Minnesota, and I don't think now is not the time to raise the debt limit at this time. With the way the economy is looking, I think it's time to be a little more cautious. So with that, I would ask members to support this amendment.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. We'll move on to the A9 amendment. Representative Nash, I believe that is yours.
Yes.
Would you like to move your amendment?
I would. I'm trying to make sure that my microphone doesn't fall on the floor.
Representative Nash moves the A9 amendment. Representative Nash, please describe the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that earlier in the legislative year we had a presentation about senior rent control to help with a problem that has been brought up, but I would like to remove that language. It's on page 14.5 to 14.15 for the specific reason that this is going to wind up putting the people who own, manage, and run those buildings in a predicament when it comes to maintaining those buildings. Rents, in part, pay for maintenance and upkeep and deferred maintenance of these buildings. If they are not able to keep up with rents commensurate with what the needs of the building are and what the market around them is providing, and they're not going to be able to repair the building. And we've talked about buildings that fall into great disrepair. And we're even seeing that here in some of the St. Paul
rent control outcomes, that buildings are not being able to be maintained. And I think that that's problematic, that there is maybe a different or hybridized version, but this is not it, the language that you have in the bill.
Chair Howard.
Chair Bodger, Representative Nash, I would encourage a no vote. I want to just make a few notes. The language here is more narrow than the bill we heard in committee, and I would note what Representative Stevenson would note, that the narrow group of properties that this is applied to are already rent controlled, so to speak, in a sense, because of the type of housing that they're providing, and would encourage a no vote.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Bajaj, Chair Howard, members, I would encourage supporting this amendment. The reason for that is I don't know if any of you have had worked with your parents or have relatives that are seniors trying to get into some senior housing. Good luck. It's 18 to 24 months to get into it. We have a huge demand for it. But one of the biggest problems they have, and yes, I've had to deal with it with both my mother-in-law and my parents with the rent issue. But right now, I don't know if you're aware, maintenance and the cost of owning a home or any type of housing, those maintenance costs have gone up 20% in the last year because of inflation. Biden inflation. Trying to hopefully get the parts because of back order issues. But when you limit the amount of increase, and most of those, especially these senior housing, they don't want to raise it more than they absolutely have to. Especially in the privately run facilities, because they don't get to go to the state and with their hand out to get money to fix things. They have to do it themselves. They have to find a way to replace the roof, pave the parking lot when it needs repaving, doing tuck pointing on the building if it needs it. But they only raise as much as they have to in order to get the work done. They do a fantastic job working with them. A lot of times they start in the independent living. And a lot of times they move into assisted living. Because at least in my area and in greater Minnesota, these places sometimes are privately owned, sometimes they're not. But they start with independent living that's separate from the assisted living and when you go to needing full care. But the reason they want to get into them is because once you're there, it's no hassle, no waiting time to move on to the next step of life if you have to go to assisted living. We need more of them. We need a lot more of them. But a bill like this that limits is going to shut them down. That's the last thing we should do to our parents and our grandparents. Representative Nash, thank you for this amendment. It is important to our seniors. Yes, we don't want to raise the rent. But when the costs go up, like everything else, most and the vast majority of for housing providers, especially for seniors, they only raise it the minimum they need to make sure that the facility can keep operating.
Chair Howard, any comments before?
Just one. Chair Bajaj, Lee Johnson. For a lot of these properties, there's actually, as I mentioned, this section, I believe it's 42 housing, they're rent controlled. There's limits to what they can do to raise the rent. And to the contrary, with some of the private entities, and why Representative Stevenson brought the bill, is there's some private entities literally raising the very max that they're allowed to under the law, creating double-digit rent increases for seniors on fixed incomes. That's sort of why we have this proposal. And so I just wanted to provide that context.
Representative Nash.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I had a question for nonpartisan legal staff, if I could. So my question is this. Is there anything in federal law that would prevent Minnesota from setting a low-income housing tax credit program rent moratorium below the rate established by the Department of Housing and Urban Development?
Mr. Pope?
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, not to my knowledge, but I'd need to look into that.
Representative Nash?
Thank you. Second question, is there anything in federal or state statute that would prevent Minnesota from setting the LIHTC senior housing rent moratorium for on for-profit owners while not applying the same moratorium to not-for-profit owners?
I don't know, Mr. Cope, if you would know. If not,
Madam Cope. Chair, Representative Nash, I'm sorry, I need to look into that further.
All right, well, we can get back
and
to you.
And with the Chair's indulgence, I would appreciate that before we hit the floor. It's a question that I wanted to make sure that we framed before we carry on with it. So
yeah, I mean, we can always get that type of information in terms of, like, what the various standards are under the LIHTC agreements, but I don't think we'll be able to get that right this second.
I just wanted to make sure that we put it on record that that's a question that needs to be asked and answered.
Sure.
So,
Lee Johnson, back to you.
Chair Bajaj, Chair Howard, just back to your the comment you made about max increases, and yes, there were some. I believe they're in the city of Minneapolis because they're looking at rent control. They had to get their rates up so they could survive for a few years in case it actually went into place. That's what rent control did. It skyrocketed some prices before it went into effect. This is going to do the same thing across the state and not just in Minneapolis. This is going to hurt our senior citizens. So it does need to come out.
See also another comment from Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Agbaje. I just wanted to correct the record. I've got one of these Dominion properties in my district. I don't live in Minneapolis. I live in Blaine. These senior residents in my district have had the maximum increase every year. Same with Coon Rapids right next to me. This is a pervasive issue. Blaine Life newspaper actually ran a multi-page article on this last year. The headline, Dominion Renters, We're Living in Fear. This is a very pervasive issue. I think Chair Howard did a great job of explaining that, you know, this there was already a rent restriction on this. It's just one that doesn't make much sense for seniors. It's based on area median income, which is the income of working folks in the area. We know that Social Security COLAs don't oftentimes match the increase that we're seeing in working folks' income increases. So I think this bill maintains the appropriate balance of making sure that we're not being overly burdensome and making sure that these private providers who are receiving government funds in order to develop their properties are maintaining their commitment to keeping these apartments affordable for seniors as intended in the public purpose of us giving them the government funds in the first place, but uses a different metric, a metric that is appropriate for senior housing, which is how much are these seniors' Social Security checks increasing from year to year, not the person who is getting a paycheck from an employer every 2 weeks.
Thank you. See Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I just wanted to say, I think Representative Norris brought up a very good point, and that is oftentimes Social Security increases do not keep up with inflation. And sometimes they don't keep up with the cost of living around, which means there's kind of becomes a pinch point when the cost and maintenance and overhead of a building grows faster than what the Social Security comes. I don't know what the answer is because it's a challenge out there, and it's always a give and take, and it's true when we start taking things outside of the context of holistically how it impacts everything. And so I think in this case, this may be somewhat premature until we really understand how it goes, but I do think there's concern here, And so I don't think we need to just say, well, because one company does within the limits too high, senior citizens need to have another special carve out. That may be true, but also the understanding is that the buildings still have to be at least break even a point. And so there is some pinch point there that we need to also consider. So thank you.
Chair Howard, any final comment?
Chair Baggio, I'll just say I think Representative Petersburg makes good comments that this is not a straightforward issue, and we do need to continue to explore and look at it, and I appreciate the discussion, but I would vote urge a no vote.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. We'll move on to the A10 amendment. Back to you, Lee Johnson. Would you like to move the A10 amendment?
Members, Chair Baje, Chair Howard, I move the A10 amendment.
All right. Lee Johnson moves the A10 amendment. Please describe the amendment.
The A10 amendment deals with the same section that we just finished talking about, but it just removes lines 14.14 and 14.15. It removes that, puts the same restriction on our nonprofits as our for-profits, putting everybody on the same leg. So everybody would be equal in that part of it as far as the rent increases. If it's good enough for the, if the nonprofits can raise whatever they want, why shouldn't those who are not nonprofits be able to? We want one Minnesota, let our housing be, housing supply and housing providers be equal.
Chair Howard?
Simple as that.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Lee Johnson. Chair Howard?
Chair Baje, Lee Johnson. I would urge a no vote. You know, really we have really only seen these sort of large increases for the private entities, and so I would urge a no vote.
Any, Lee Johnson?
Chair Bradley, yeah. Chair Abadje, Chair Howard. We've also seen them in the nonprofits as well across the state. Just because where places are looking at different restrictions and different things, they raise their rates because they're unsure. What I'm concerned about is fairness. We're picking, this body is now picking winners and choosers and losers, which is what we should not be doing. We should be treating everybody the same. Every business is the same, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit. I've seen the assets of a lot of these nonprofits. I've looked up their 990 forms. And a lot of times they have more assets than our for-profit. Makes you wonder what they're doing with all that money that they're obtaining, especially with all the grant money that we're giving them. I think it's time to look at a whole view and treat them all the same, because a lot of times I've seen our for-profits actually do a much better job at their equipment buildings, because they have to. If they want people there, they're going to maintain them properly. So with that, I'm going to ask that, I think I'm going to ask for a roll call on this, because I think we need to treat everyone in this business the same and not give favoritism to our favorite nonprofits.
All right, roll call having been requested. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Dahl, please take the roll.
Chair Howard.
No.
Howard, no. Vice Chair Igbaje.
No.
Igbaje, no. Lee Johnson.
Yes.
Johnson, yes. Representative Cha.
No.
Cha, no. Representative Dotseth.
Dotseth, yes.
Dotseth, yes. Representative Hassan.
No.
Hassan, no. Representative Hussein. No. Hussein, no. Representative Kozlowski.
No.
Kozlowski, no. Representative Myers.
Aye.
Myers, yes. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash, yes. Representative Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Representative Perez Vega.
No.
Perez Vega, no. Representative Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, yes.
With 5 ayes and 8 noes, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. We'll move on to the last amendment in our packet, which is the A11, which I believe is also Lee Johnson. Lee Johnson, would you like to move the A11 amendment?
Chair Abaji, Chair Howard, I move the A11 amendment.
Thank you. Lee Johnson moves the A11 amendment to your amendment.
Chair Abaji, Chair Howard, this amendment is a simple one. It removes Section 1 of Article 3, requiring Section 8 housing by private owners. Private owners of rental property, or it can be instead of forcing somebody to sign a contract with the federal government, it's called discrimination. It's not. With this amendment, I think it's important that housing providers have a choice whether they want to be in that program or not. I think it's important that we look at it closely and they can decide whether they want to be part of it or not. It's an option they have. But do I feel it's that we should require property owners to sign a contract with the federal government in order to be involved in the Section 8 housing program? And it's just a little part, even though it's just a little part of the Section 8 program, I think we should come up, instead of forcing them, I think it would be better to come up with a carrot and stick process. Give them an incentive to be involved in it, not force them. Granted, there was the state's appellate court upheld the city of Minneapolis's right now. That just came out, but it's under appeal yet. And because it's a federal contract, once the state gets done at the Supreme Court, they can actually go to federal court. And we saw what happened just this weekend on housing issues in federal court. I think it's something that we need to look in closer before we go down this line and see before we get into the litigation end of it, see what's going to happen with the Minneapolis ordinance, because that's still going through the courts. It's also going to require cities, a lot of cities and a lot of counties, to have a lot more inspections. More tax dollars being used to do these things, because in order to get involved in the programs, they have to come and inspect your home or your unit that you're renting. Even if it's a bedroom apartment, just a single bedroom in a home, they have to come out and inspect. They might have to do a lot of work on their home in order to participate. This is going to affect our colleges, our college dorms. It's going to affect all the housing that our college kids use outside of the dorm. This is going to affect a lot of places where some of these people are just going to shut down their rental units. We don't need that. We need more. We need more housing. And something like this, I think, is going to cause a lot of problems in the future. It's going to be, it's going to hurt our rental supply of homes. And with that, I'm going to ask the, one last thing. It's interesting that we're dealing with this now, when it's going to be on the House floor tomorrow in another bill. I'm just wondering how many other places it's going to pop up as well. So, but I'm going to ask that members do support this. Like, we'll be voting on it tomorrow on the floor. It doesn't need to be in this bill at this time.
Chair Howard.
Trick Bajay, Lee Johnson. First, on that last point, there's it's the Representative Phyllis Kahn School of Legislating, where you put bills in as many places that are important to get done. And this is a really important bill. And to the point of the timing piece of it, I mean, this is a proposal that's been around for a number of years. In fact, I've been in the legislature. This is my sixth year. This will be hopefully the sixth year the House passes this bill off the floor, and hopefully the sixth time's the charm, because it's a very important piece of legislation. In Minnesota, landlords can't discriminate against people based on their race or if they have a disability, and they shouldn't be able to discriminate based on someone's resources. And it's the very reasonable, and we've heard from Minnesotans. I would encourage folks to look in their packets. We received a lot of written testimony from folks. And last year, it's more important than ever, because last year we passed state-based housing vouchers for the first time ever. And we believe it is eminently reasonable to ensure that Minnesotans that have a Section 8 voucher or a form of housing assistance have access to housing and don't, when they file, try to apply, see, not allowed, which is what's happening currently. And so this is an important piece of legislation, and I would encourage a no vote.
Representative Dotson.
Would Chair Howard yield to a question?
We don't need to yield to questions here, but we will.
Representative Dotson,
ask your question.
Now you sound like Schultz.
No, don't compare me to Schultz.
Representative Dotson, to your question.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Howard, would it be safe to say that to qualify for Section 8, there's special inspections, special fees that may be required for the landowner or the property owner to actually follow for the property to qualify for Section 8?
Chair Howard.
Chair Bajay, Representative Dotseth. I mean, there are, there is a contract. There are sort of things within the federal government that landlords have to enter. What I would say is they're pretty basic. It's not an unreasonable, if you're going to do business as a landlord, it's not unreasonable. There's all kinds of things that businesses sort of have expectations if you're going to be doing business to enter into sort of contracts, agreements, et cetera. And so, sure, there is a contract, but I think it's very reasonable and not an onerous one.
Representative
Dossett. Chair Howard, the question I would have is, what happens if the property does not meet those qualifications?
Chair Howard.
Chair Bajay, Representative Dotseth, if the, I would assume if they don't meet the qualifications, they cannot accept the vouchers. Like if a place is just beyond disrepair, mm-hmm. That type of piece. But
I'll just add. Just the little bit that I know, I think for most places, what the purpose of what this section is supposed to do is really just say that if you are in the market to do business for housing, you should not be able to then advertise that you are discriminating based on source of income. So for those who would qualify to be able to be part of this, it really just actually depends on the type of housing that you're providing. And so oftentimes there are actually a number of landlords who don't even meet some of the thresholds because they just surpass them, especially in terms of the amount of money they're asking for their units. And so for a number of landlords, they probably wouldn't even be able to provide housing that qualifies under HUD because it's just actually above, like the money is above. If you can't meet other requirements of the contract, that would just be a separate issue. But this also wouldn't really come into play until you actually have an applicant that also has a voucher. So I would just kind of qualify those statements that way. But Representative Dotson, if you have a further question.
I do. Thank you, Chair. With that said, could that potentially lessen our stock of housing stock out there? Could that help actually eliminate the less stock of housing just because some of these properties don't qualify and landlords choose not even to get in the rental business? Would that
Is that a possibility?
Chair Howard.
Chair Roger Epson Dodd, I don't think so. I think it's very unlikely that somebody would decide not to participate, a landlord would decide to sort of pull out and sell all their properties because they would be asked to participate and receive applications for someone with a Section 8 voucher.
Well, I just feel this is thank you, Chair. I just feel this is extremely reckless language. I think it could be discrimination against landlords as well. So I think it's something we have to consider. Thank you.
Do you want to go after Representative Petersburg? Okay. Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Chair, you know, I think I heard you say, and I want to make sure that I heard this right, that it's we shouldn't be discriminating against people based upon their assets. And I think that's the terminology you use. But yet, when you go to buy a car, your assets are very important, and whether or not you could pay for that car is very important before somebody will be willing to sell you their car on credit or get a credit there. And we're doing kind of the same thing and this is kind of, again, getting into a little bit more of the gray area. When you have your asset that you're putting in the hands of somebody else in the expectation of receiving something back, you should be expected to have a certain reasonableness of understanding on whether or not they have the capacity of being able to respond to that contract. Because what you are doing in any rental agreement is a contract between the renter and the provider. And that's true for any contract that we have. And each party needs to have a certain level of confidence and expectation that the other side will fulfill that contract. Now, when you're dealing with only the fact that, in this case, the rental property is still owned by the provider, but what your only thing you're expecting is whether or not you get the finances back to cover the agreement, then there is some question and some rationale about why you would want to know that information. And this language seems to imply that this particular program, Section 8, should not be considered when you determine whether or not you think the person is qualified to pay. And I'm saying I think that may be a little bit too stringent because the federal government and other programs don't change as quickly as other things that happen. And so it may be something they should consider. So it seems to me that this language that's in the bill is very narrowly focused and probably something that should be considered. But all I'm saying is that's a gray area because landlords, home providers, rental providers, whatever, need to have an assurance that they're going to be able to get the property back in a good fashion and that the funding is going to be necessary. So I think that's a concern that we all need to be aware of, and I think we all do. Thank you.
Representative Howard. Chair Howard.
Representative Petersburg, I don't disagree that, you know, when landlords are, you know, they're going to check to see if folks, you know, have a security deposit, all of the things that they normally do to see if the potential tenant, you know, has the resources to afford the various piece. But the thing with the Section 8 program is it works incredibly well in the sense that those folks have the ability to pay their rent. They're just receiving a subsidy from the government. And what we're saying is that we shouldn't allow basically folks on the front end to say, no, not allowed. And the other piece I guess maybe I'll just leave it there okay. for now.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Abadji, Chair Howard. I was listening intensely with some of the information that was given out, especially from Representative Abadji. What I see with this bill, what's going to happen, you're going to see rent skyrocket. You're going to see owners, property owners and housing providers raise their rates to the point where they will no longer qualify for that program. That's not going to help. There's a lot of housing providers that keep it down to help people, but they want to make sure they have good qualified tenants. ones that are actually going to pay their rent, not be evicted, or go through the eviction process because they don't get around to paying their rent, or just don't care if they pay their rent. It's getting harder for them with some of the things we passed last year. So they're concerned. But with this in there, they have no choice but to raise the rents to above that market where they could actually help some people that are on the edge. So I do have one question for you, Chair Howard. Which program on Section 8 are you looking at them participating in?
Chair Howard?
Chair Agbaje, Lee Johnson, I think a lot of the conversation has been around Section 8, but what this language says is that you couldn't discriminate based on source of income. It's not specific.
Lee Johnson?
members, Representative Agbaje, Chair Howard. Because you have that federal in there, that's why. There's only one program, which is Section 8 choice. It's a choice for the housing provider, privately owned property, to go in. It's not a mandate. Now, public housing, nonprofit, there's a lot more rules for them, but they almost have to get involved. But for those that own their property privately, it's a choice. They deserve the choice. But even if they're state dollars that we're using for the programs, and now you're jacking the rent up to the point where nobody will qualify because the rent is so high. So it's going backwards. And with that, members, I do request support the amendment.
All right. Sorry, I saw one more member. Did you, Representative Hassan, did you still want to?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. Madam Chair, members, I'm sitting here listening to the Section 8 program as somebody who has worked in that program. I really want to put this on the record. So the Section 8 vouchers are people who are getting assistance from a federal program. They have a voucher and they can rent anywhere, right, with any landlord that accepts Section 8. The landlord does not need to do anything special. I just want to put that on the record because it keeps coming up that rent is going to be high because the landlords have to do some special thing, some special way. If you are following the law and you are a landlord who's treating their, you know, tenants, right, all you have to do maybe is, sign up with the federal program, but you don't have to. Like, there's no special fees. There's no special way that you have to make the unit. I just want to make sure that people understand that this is not some special program that people have to, like, move mountains to make it work. If I am a, you know, landlord and I have an opening in my building and I want to accept a Section 8, there is not extra that I have to do other than other renters. I would just give an application. People would pay the application fee if they are approved, you know, put down a deposit and pay rent and move into the unit. That's all I wanted to put on the record because it keeps coming back that rent will be expensive because we're forcing people to accept Section 8.
All right. Seeing no further discussion. Chair Howard does want to say something. Okay, one last.
I did want to and we've had a third discussion. I hesitate, but I just wanted to say one piece. And I related to something Lee Johnson said, that, you know, landlords should expect that their tenants can pay rent, that they're going to keep the property in good condition, et cetera, et cetera. And I know this probably wasn't the implication, but, you know, there's a lot of evidence that suggests and is true that Section 8 tenants are absolutely as strong tenants and good tenants as anybody else. And to me, that potential implication that folks might think that a Section 8 tenant is not going to treat their property well is partly why we need this legislation, to make sure that we don't have sort of those, that to me would be discrimination. and why this bill is so important. And so that I may have extended our conversation, but I thought it was important just to mention that.
That's fine. Okay, we will give Lee Johnson, as the author of the amendment, the last comment, and then we will vote. Lee Johnson.
Chair Badgett, Chair Howard, I want to thank everyone for the conversations on this amendment. There's concerns on both sides. I know a lot of people that have used Section 8. There's some great people on Section 8. But there's some really bad actors on Section 8 of the renters. I've dealt with them in my career in law enforcement. There's places that we go to all the time dealing with the same people time after time. And they move from one apartment complex to the next, one city to the next. Those are the ones that give the Section 8 a bad name. And those are the ones that the property owners and housing providers want to keep out. Because they've done a lot of damage. I've taken the complaints. I've photographed all the damage for the police reports. And it's common. But it's usually the same people time after time. But like I say, there's some good people that just down on their luck and they have to use the Section 8 housing. But they're good people, they're a diamond in the rough. Not all of them are bad. The vast majority are good. But forcing property owners to take a chance that they don't want to take a chance on, they'd rather make sure that their property is going to be maintained properly, it's not going to get damaged. There's never a 100% guarantee. But I don't think we should force them into these programs. It should be a choice. We all make choices. And with something like this, in order so they do not have to participate in the programs, I see every one of them raising their rates to the point where we're going to be losing availability of some of the units that are out there. Please vote for the amendment.
All right, no further discussion. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. All right, with that, that concludes the amendments for the DE. So I renew the motion to adopt the DE1 amendment as amended. And so now we'll go to discussion to the DE1 as amended. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, we'll vote on the DE1 as amended. So that is before us. All those in favor of the DE1 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
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 The motion prevails and the DE1 as amended is adopted. Now we are on the underlying bill as amended. Any discussion from members? Right, not seeing anybody. All right, I guess we're going to save it for the floor. Chair Howard, any closing remarks? Or Representative Johnson, do you want to say anything?
Chair Badgett, Chair Howard. I wish with this bill we'd have done more for actually building and getting the cost of homes down. There's a lot of in here for rental. A lot of it not actually going to help. It might hurt. But when this bill comes to the floor, I hope we can actually make it better and get to the point where we can actually get some starter homes built for people to purchase, to build their generational wealth, to pass on to their kids. But not just the starter homes, because those are also the finishing home for their seniors that want to downsize. Instead of renting and just throwing their money away, they can keep their generational wealth and pass it on. It's unfortunate that this committee this year and last year spent most of their time on rental, not dealing with the housing crisis, not dealing with finding a way to build homes. homes for those individuals, especially on that borderline. If we can get that cost down, we have a lot of people that could actually buy a home, start building that generational wealth. So I'm disappointed that we didn't do that. This is the opportunity this year because we did a whole bunch of stuff for rent last year. We should have been on the housing, building home side of it, dealing with that issue. So with that, I'll let you have the final words on your bill.
Okay. I'll move that Chair Howard has the last word on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Gbaje. Thank you, members of the committee. On this bill, as we mentioned yesterday, this really is a continuation of our good work last year to invest in housing across the continuum of housing, including homeownership, the record investments we had last year. And as I mentioned, this bill really focuses on housing stability and centers the fact that despite our historic efforts last year, there are many Minnesotans facing crises. And we're going to try to prevent homelessness and keep as many Minnesotans housed as possible and recognize that we have much, much more to do. And on that front, I want to thank the committee for their work, both sides of the aisle, on this bill, whether it's actual language amendments. I believe the discussion in this committee all is included here in this bill and is something that I hope folks can support. And then after we pass this, I'll just have a few closing remarks to Chair Gbaje for our committee. But thank you, members. I would encourage a yes vote.
All right. I renew the motion that House File 4194, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
Motion prevails, and the House File 4194, as amended, is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All right. Well, seeing that this is our last regular meeting, Chair Howard, any final words before we conclude our business today?
Chair Gbaje, members, I just want to share immense gratitude, first especially to all of our staff. We have, our staff really helped prepare these, everything that's to make a committee run strong and run successful flows through our excellent partisan and nonpartisan staff. And so thank you all so much. And I'm just thankful to each and every member of this committee. I know there are, of course, differences of opinions, but I truly believe that some of the values, a lot of the values we share, and about the importance and foundation that having a home means in our lives is what drives us to be on this committee. And I think the conversation that we've had has reflected that this year, and I'm immensely grateful for folks. I want to thank Lee Johnson in particular for our work together this session, and credit your caucus for showing up on time a little bit better than I was most of the year. There's always things we can work on. But just have really appreciated our committee's work. And I specifically want to call out Representative Hassan for her 6 years of work and service on the Housing Committee and her commitment especially to creating home ownership opportunities. And when I think about the legislation that we passed last year, the Home Ownership Investment Grant, something that's never been done before, that you authored, the down payment assistance that we passed, your legacy in housing will be seen by thousands of Minnesotans who were able to open that door for the very first time and own a home. And we may have a informational hearing, but if this is your last housing committee, I just want to say thank you to Representative Hassan, and I would just encourage folks to give a quick round of a hand. Members, this is our last committee where we'll take official action. We may have an informational hearing, and we've got more work to do. The last thing I'll say is, in particular on the work to build housing supply, supply of homes to own, homes to rent, there is so much more we need to do. We started an important conversation on this this year and look forward in a bipartisan way for us to continue down that path. Home is the foundation for everything, and we have a lot of work to do and look forward to doing that work with all of you. Thank you so much.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Chair Howard. And with that, this concludes our business for the day, and we are adjourned.